The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so question submitted on the text line. I'll read it here. In formal practice, there's a distinction between taking a more receptive approach to whatever thoughts are going through your mind, i.e. open awareness style, and taking a more directed approach, redirecting to an object. I understand this in the context of formal practice, but find myself unsure of how to approach various mind states in day-to-day life, especially negative ones, jealousy, fear, rumination, anger, sadness. Some teachings seem to suggest a more active uprooting of unwholesome mind states, and others suggest generally resting in more awareness of whatever's going on without trying to actively change it. I assume there's some discernment needed about which approach is best under given circumstances, but I would love it if you could shed some more light on it. Is it a hierarchy? Bringing more receptive awareness to what's going on is ideal, but revert to a more active approach of changing the channel if you're overwhelmed or unable to maintain awareness? Or is it dwelling in less wholesome states to be avoided through active means? Or is it totally dependent on what the mind is actually doing? You should bear with it, understand it. So, okay. Few principles come to mind. And the first is don't fetishize technique. This is all kind of made up. Weird words, doing our best. Some precedented in the suttas, but even that's made up. No real hierarchy. The Buddha knew like skillful means. Suffering, yours and mine. That is, in the end, what matters. And some of the evolution is just gradual. The Dharma is better at preventing fires than putting them out. And over time, we don't get backed into corners in the same way. The intensely unpleasant, destructive mind states don't arise the same frequency and force. That's a function of training. And the two of the four wise efforts, restraining so that unwholesomeness doesn't arise and abandoning the unwholesomeness that has arisen. To my mind, those are things that actually, in a sense, happened before the fact. We developed the trait of restraint, not kind of stoking desires that get us in trouble, but it's on automatic in a way. We developed the trait of letting go, where renunciation feels more natural than holding on. And the distance, you know, between suffering and ease gets so much shorter, you know, as we grow. The suffering doesn't feel thick anymore. Might still suffer, but it feels only like a stone's throw from peace or love. And so what I'm saying is a kind of emotion regulation becomes very second nature, and we don't even notice the skill as we're wielding it, really. Now, this is going to be jazz-like and improvisational. The Dharma is a lot of experimentation and improvisation. And if you're interested, if you're like just interested, I'm interested, like, what is this? What is happening? Just that is kind of enough, you know, like genuinely interested. So we want to be careful not to not to mistake subtle spiritual aversion for equanimity. Sometimes the teachings seem to give license to some measure of aversion. You know, abandoning the unwholesome sounds a lot like, let me get rid of that, you know. And maybe sometimes it's okay, but we don't want to mistake that for a kind of true turning towards, the true turning towards of equanimity. And equanimity is, we can look like it's made more of curiosity than desperation. We actually don't need something to happen to the unpleasantness. If you're in that realm of bartering, you know, that's a sign like, okay, I actually have to let go more deeply. And if I can't, I need to do something else. So equanimity, it's like whatever the time course of the pain is, whatever it is, we can feel of the equanimity is turning it into goodness. When we're actually poised in some measure of equanimity, we are not afraid of what craving might do to our heart or our behavior. And we should be careful not to overestimate our equanimity. It's very humbling just to have to, like, I don't got it, you know? And so we have to be careful to distinguish being with from marinating in. And when you're marinating, kind of drowning in a way in unpleasant unwholesomeness, there's this a lot of should, like I should be with this, I should be with this. But then when we marinate in it, it seems to prove like equanimity didn't help. But the truth is, the experiment was just not run fairly. So sometimes we do something like, and you were alluding to this in the question, do something like cognitive therapy on ourselves. And we hear so much about allowing, but the Buddha relied extensively on active cognitive approaches. We have, you know, this whole vocabulary on equanimity and allowing and permission and non-interference and all of that. But sometimes he was just like very active. This is from the Majjhima, maybe. Vitaka Sutta, something. It says, just as a skilled carpenter might knock out, remove, and extract a coarse peg by means of a fine one, so too, when one gives attention to some other sign connected with what is wholesome, then any unwholesome thoughts connected with craving, hate, delusion are abandoned and subside. With the abandoning of them, the one's mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness, and concentrated. Sometimes we're encouraged to reflect on the likely results of indulging states that get us into trouble. The word is rendered as the danger of following this thread. Sometimes we redirect the attention. It's not such an active cognitive uprooting, but it's a turning away, a constructive turning away. It's not exactly the same brittleness as avoidance, but it's like sometimes we just know to pay attention to that is to drown in it. And there are certain zones of the heart mind, certain moments where the line between being with and collapsing into is incredibly permeable. Sometimes it's a more deconstructive, investigative approach. And we may first need to listen deeply to the feeling. We can assume that there's something in it. There's some kernel of information tangled up with all the delusion. We want to hear it. The feeling will not let go until we actually hear what needs to be heard. And then it can be put down. And so maybe there's a question for you to interrogate, like, okay, what is the information in this jealousy or this anger, this whatever? It's not 100% delusion, most likely. There's something valuable to be understood. It's just that we follow that wisdom and it will terminate in love. It will not terminate in jealousy or anger, but we have to like listen. And then bound up with maybe that kernel of something, some need that's being testified to, we detect the nature of the clinging bound up with it. You know, where did this pain come from? And it's not a theoretical thing. You know, it's like what are the habits of mind that made very fertile ground for the arising of this pain? What deeper pain is this merely symptom of? Don't chase down the symptoms. A doctor is more interested in the infection than the its associated fever. What must be seen, recognized as empty? Generally speaking, the clinging will fall into one or two categories, and this is not an official list, but something like self and death. And those are related, but that's another topic. But self and death, the kind of melodrama of I amness, and the urgency around security and fear and protection. And we do, as I say, often have to do something like grieve the homelessness of ego, that self-aggrandizement in all its manifestations has to register as a dead end. It's like I cannot land there. We got to get that deeply, and then we can drop it. And as for fear, sometimes that simply has to be accommodated. Sometimes we, you know, just have to honor that, not move, interrogate it any further. And sometimes we call on the kind of the certainty of death as a way of simplifying everything. Other times we do a little reality testing. Okay, safe enough for now. And then sometimes it's like we know how the story ends. And What do we want? Well, I one way of reading the suttas is that what we really want is freedom, is peace. That in the end is what we truly want. Everything else is just a proxy for peace. We'll stop here. I don't know where that leaves you, but may even one sentence be of modest use in your practice to the questioner. All right, I wish you all well. I'll be away Crestone next week, so we won't have class, but back the following, and wish you all well.